You are listening to The News Project, in studio. Brought to you by GNAT TV.
Hello and welcome back to another edition of GNAT TV's in-depth series. I'm Andrew McKeever, the news director at GNAT TV's News Project, and it's a pleasure to have you with us today on Wednesday, November 17th. It's also a great pleasure to be joined in our virtual studio by Randy Lowe, who is the school superintendent for the Bennington-Rutland Supervisory Union. And as many of you know, that supervisory union includes the Medway School District, which includes the towns of Paulett and Rupert, the Taconic & Green Regional School District, which includes the towns of Danby, Dorset, Landgrove, Londonderry, Manchester, Mount Tabor, Peru, Sunderland, and Weston. Boy, that's a lot of towns. And also the Windhall School District as well. Superintendent Lowe is now in her second year at the helm of the BRSU. She had served as the assistant superintendent for special education before she took over the top post 2 years ago. And Superintendent Lowe, it always reminds me that your arrival at the top post there at the supervisor union coincided almost exactly with the arrival of the COVID pandemic. Your timing was exquisite when it comes to that. But I guess I just was wondering, now as we're going through year two here of the pandemic era and education, things are a lot different, I guess, than they were at this time a year ago. But I was wondering if you could bring us all up to speed on sort of how things are going in schools in general, as you navigate through in-person learning, returning to that, and also things like the COVID testing and quarantines and other lingering impacts of the whole pandemic.
Sure. Thanks, Andrew. So I would say that navigating this is probably a great word to describe it. This I would have said last year was unlike any other year. The year before when we went into closure in March was unlike any other year. And this year is different than both of those years and any year I've ever experienced in education. So we are back full time in person, and we have high COVID case counts. And so it's creating a very different dynamic for us. We have, I will say before I say anything else, that I am incredibly proud of the work that our supervisory union is doing. Our teachers and staff are doing incredible work and under really, really challenging conditions. And we have some unfilled positions still, and there's a real shortage of substitute teachers. And that makes every single day starts with sort of a juggling act of who's not here, how are we going to fill positions. And every single school, it's not just us, it's throughout the state, I know for sure, is doing this daily juggling act. That builds a level of dis-ease and sort of uncertainty within the system. And there just aren't people to come in and do this work. So our folks are unbelievably resilient and positive and flexible and working hard to make sure that our schools and our classrooms stay open. And I could not be more proud of the work everyone's doing to make that happen. So we have, as you know, you and I both have visited some schools, and we have really great programming happening within our classrooms. The teaching and learning that's happening is awesome. People are being innovative and creative and engaging and attending to the needs of our students and letting go of things that aren't working and taking risks and trying new things in order to better meet student needs, both learning and social emotional. And so it's challenging everybody. So I guess, you know, that's sort of what's happening in our schools. We are following the Department of Health guidance around quarantining. Our nurses and our building leaders are spending a lot of time needing to determine close contacts, contact trace, communicate with families. We unfortunately, you know, regularly have students or staff who are quarantining. And so that impacts, obviously, the learning experience for kids. But I would say that by and large, our families really understand and are supportive and are doing the best they can to support our work as well. Our community has been very, very supportive of the work that we've been doing over the last couple of years. We are impacted. Probably people don't necessarily realize this, but we have employees who live outside of our supervisory union in other districts. And so if their school closes or their child needs to quarantine, now we have our staff who are needing to be out to take care of their family members or the children. And there's a whole lot of moving parts all the time in a way that we have never experienced before.
Mm, wow. That's amazing. I guess, one of the sort of the big news stories that's just been happening recently in the past few weeks is the whole opening up of vaccinations to 5 to 11-year-olds. And many of the students in the BRSU would fall into that age bracket. I guess I was just wondering, how has that been going? Has the rollout of that been fairly smooth? Have the numbers of students being vaccinated been what you expected? Or has there been some resistance to all of that?
Right. So it's a great question. I don't have access to that information right now. So I don't have my head wrapped around how many of our 5 to 11-year-olds have been vaccinated. We did have a clinic here in Manchester last Saturday, and there were 200 spots available, and I think there were about 195 shots given that day. It was only for 5 to 11-year-olds. I've certainly heard from many families who are very excited that the vaccine is available for their children. I'm hopeful and optimistic about where we'll be when we come back in January, and I hope that we have many students who are vaccinated. And we also have folks who are, not supportive of it right now. We have families who are choosing to say not now or not for my child. And, they have every right to make that decision for themselves and for their children. And there are many valid reasons for why they're making those decisions. But I'm optimistic and hopeful. We've got a great community. So
assuming we get up to that roughly that 80% level, it seems like kind of the threshold of when things can be or perceived to be sort of under control. Does that mean things like face masks might be less necessary, will that make your job easier? I guess is where I'm going.
So I really don't know what I will do if we reach that 80%. I need to take some time. I need to look at what our conditions are. Right now, it's difficult for me with the numbers being what they are within our community to consider stopping with masking. But I don't know where we'll be in January. So I'm holding back on making any decisions. I'm going to wait. I'm going to hear from the Department of Health. I'm going to hear from the Agency of Ed. I'm going to find out where our numbers are. I'm going to see what the conditions are and make the best decision I can make at that time.
And the other thing I just wanted to quickly run by you was the whole test to stay program. I guess the Agency of Education is opening up. That's an opportunity for students in school to be tested kind of on the spot to determine if they might be a positive case, and that then action could then be taken. Is that supposed to start next week? Is that the idea, or can you tell us what's happening with that?
Right. So we've completed the onboarding process with the state and going through all of the waiver and requirements that we needed to on the back end of that. This week, we're sending out letters to families for them to opt in for Test to Stay. Test to Stay is only available. It's a rapid antigen test, and it's only to be used for unvaccinated people. So, for unvaccinated folks who are found to be close contacts within our schools, then yes, they can come. Their child can take the rapid test, and if it's negative, then they can go to class. And if it's positive, then they would leave. So, it's a way to help prevent our kids from needing to quarantine and be out for a week from school. And I don't have an exact start date right now. We're getting the letter out. Once we have all the information back, where we have the first bulk of information back, we have to get it all included in the system. Our schools right now, and it's like an online system in order to manage the tests and the results. And our schools are fine-tuning their protocols and plans. We allowed that. I chose to have that determined at the building level because Our schools are so very, very different in size and structure and resources that it didn't make sense for me to have a one-size-fits-all approach to that. So principals and nurses are working right now to figure that out. And I don't believe we'll be starting next week. I'm hoping to start after Thanksgiving. It'll probably be likely the week or two after Thanksgiving that we're up and running with it. And I don't know if you know that we've been piloting take-home test kits. So we have PCR tests that we have here in our building, and we also have them at all of our schools. And so if somebody needs to quarantine and be tested, if they aren't able to get an appointment or they don't want to have to deal with making an appointment, they can take one of these take-home test kits home. And in it, it tells you everything to do in order to take the test, process it, and then they ship it back through UPS without charge to the person who sends it.
So just to shift gears a little bit here, away from purely COVID-related questions to more educational ones, I guess I just wondered, have you been able to do any assessment yet as to how the whole pandemic period since March of 2020 has impacted student learning? I mean, are there any test results or test scores or data of some sort or another that says, well, you know, despite all of this, kids are still basically on grade level and, you know, things are going well, or yeah, they may be in a little bit of a fall off, but they can make it up in future years. Any sense of how the whole environment you've been operating under for the past 20 months or so has impacted teaching?
Sure. So our SBAC scores, which are the state assessments, sort of mirrored what happened across the state, which is there was a notable decline in math performance, which happened in our district, and it also happened across the state. We had a slight reduction in reading scores, which was also similar across the state. So, you know, that was over 2 years. So we're very aware of that and poised to support our learners the best way we can. We know that we need to meet our kids where they are, that trying to teach them at a level that is too far beyond where their skill is, they will not be able to access that content. So our teachers have worked very, very hard this year to identify where their kids are, meet them where they are, and then provide instruction in a meaningful way. One of the things we're finding across a lot of our classrooms is our very, very wide diversity of learners. We typically have many, you know, within any classroom, you might have a, you know, 4 or 5 year spread. Teachers are reporting that feels even wider right now, that they're just very, very much a lot of variability within their classrooms. So they're attending to that and doing the best that they can. We're monitoring our local assessment, trying to look at student growth. But frankly, the things that I shared with you in response to your first question about like sort of how we're operating, it's tough when kids are in and out with quarantine, when we've got to shuffle people and move people. So there's inconsistency of programming because people have to cover somebody in order for us to keep a classroom open, or teachers are absent. We have a number of folks who are out because of, again, their children needing to quarantine at home and they need to cover. All of that is very, very disruptive to the learning trajectory for kids and for teachers. So I think that, you know, your last question was around where is this? Are we going to be able to make this up? You know, I'm confident that over time it will all work itself out. But the hope that we had this year about recovery and stability so far isn't really playing out that way for reasons beyond our control at this point.
Sort of related to that, one of the actions you've all taken at the Taconic and Green School District is about coming up with an ends policy, I guess, goals or outcomes you hope to see students achieve. I wonder if you could talk a little bit about that and tell us what's included or involved with the ends policy that you folks were working on earlier this year.
Sure. So both Taconic and Green and the Meadowee School Districts both went through a process of community engagement in order to hear from their community to develop an ends policy. So both boards are policy governance boards, which means that They operate under a set of policies to govern their work and to govern my work. One of their primary charges is to develop an ends policy, which is basically policy, all the policies under one. 1.0 is the main ends policy. So the two districts took different approaches, but they both came up with a policy based on the responses from community members, parents, teachers, and students. So Taconic and Green had over 600 responses, and they spent many, many months collecting, analyzing, drafting ends policies, bringing back for review, adjusting. And so now that's in place. So now that the ends policies are in place, at some point this year, I will do an interpretation of what does this mean to me as a superintendent, and what do I understand this to mean for our work as our system. So their ends, their policy is, this is what we want as outcomes for all of our students. My responsibility is to determine the means, the how. All right, I see that this is what you're looking for, that this is what the community wants. This is what you as a board is charging us with as a system. So now how are we going to accomplish that? And so that then becomes, you know, what are our practices, our instructional practices? What does our curriculum look like? What does our programming look like? What are the experiences we offer our students? How does our overall educational model, how is it designed? What are we providing for our kids in order to help meet all of those ends policies? So it's really exciting work. And when you look at the ends policy, I think one of the things that jumps out, if I think about both districts, but I'll focus on Taconic and Green, but this is similar for both. There are academics in there, and the academics that are there are the academic areas that are required by the state. Okay, so that's all that was lifted. But there are other components of it, dispositions for lifelong learning, transferable skills. How, you know, what are those components of work, of work ethic, of practices that we all use in our everyday life that we want to cultivate and develop within our schools? And those are often in concert with the academics. But it's not just about the academics. And for 21st century learners, I think that that's really important. We need to be thinking about the greater community, the greater world. We need to think about the environment. We need to think about, do we have perseverance in problem-solving skills and critical thinking skills? And are we thinking about multiple perspectives and competing viewpoints? And are we considering are we interfacing with the world in a more dynamic way? So for me as a leader, it's very exciting because our community has said, we realize that there's more to education than just content. We want our children to develop additional skills while they're in school, and we have the freedom to be able to do that.
That's all really fascinating. I just wanted to ask you about another topic that we've heard a lot about over the past year or so, at least, and that's about, you know, staff and teacher burnout. You I think, alluded earlier in our conversation to how hard the staff and the faculties are working around all the schools, just under a lot of pressure and having to learn a lot of how to do things in a different way. Is that continuing to be as difficult an issue for a lot of those folks as it was, let's say, 5 or 6 months ago, or things beginning to loosen up a little bit?
Yeah, I wish I was able to tell you that it feels like it's loosening up a little bit, even a little bit, but it doesn't. It doesn't feel that way. I think that burnout is a very real issue for us, for all of us. I'm thinking about how to answer this question. So our teachers and staff understand the conditions in which they came back to work, right? You know, Andrew, you hear about anywhere this idea of recovering from the pandemic, right? They came into this year both with, all of us sort of left in June with this hope that this year was going to be back to normal. I think that July was probably the best time we had. And then the end of July came and August came, and all of a sudden we start seeing the Delta variant impact. And I can guarantee you that every educator is watching that thinking, oh my gosh, what's happening as we're about to enter the school year, and what does it mean? And there's still, you know, all of us operating in this space of recovery and the expectation from the community, from the world, from everyone about recovering our children's education. And we came back and we're working under conditions, they're trying to teach under conditions that are every bit as difficult, if not more difficult, than they were last year. And so that takes a toll on you. Our teachers are professionals. They care about learning. They know the expectations. They put a lot of pressure on themselves, and then they're trying to do it under conditions that are challenging. And we are all still living under this pandemic. We are still never knowing what that phone call is going to come, or how it's going to disrupt our lives. And it is really, really taking a toll. People are fragile. People don't have a lot of extra capacity for extra things. We're trying to not ask too much outside of the workday for our employees. And hoping, because there's just not a lot of capacity, bandwidth to take on more. Everything is hard. They're exhausted. They're emotionally fragile, and they are stressed, and they are still giving 110% to every single day to our kids and to their work. And it is taking a toll on them.
And is it still a difficult problem to find like qualified staff, like substitute teachers or bus drivers? It seemed like for a while were very hard to come by. Is that still the case also?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We do not have very many substitute teachers, and that's problematic. I don't know if we have any substitute bus drivers, food service staff, custodians. I mean, across every aspect of our organization, we are very thinly staffed. And we are trying creative new ways to hire people. There are some interesting things happening, but we're not getting a lot of traction.
Wow, interesting. I wanted to just turn in a few minutes we have left here to talk about another thing that seems to be coming down the pike here, and that's the weighting study that the legislature has been working on or mulling over for a while, and that refers to, I guess, the fact that I guess some students are more expensive to teach than others. I'm probably putting it kind of crudely, but you'll clarify that for me, I'm sure. But basically, some students who, let's say, where English isn't their native language. Mm-hmm. Is more work has to go into to teaching them. I guess I just wondered, what are your thoughts on this weighting study? Is it something that's a good idea that we should re-explore? I mean, I guess there's also a tax implication as well, that the costs might get moved around a bit. Some towns that are used to paying a certain amount might find themselves paying more, or some might find themselves paying less, but I wondered if you could just tell us a little bit about what's involved with all of that from your perspective.
So I think that the reason that the study from UVM was initially, that they were asked to do this study was there were concerns about the current funding formula and whether or not it really was equitable and whether districts were getting the amount of funds that they should in order to operate their schools. And so the study concluded that the weights were off, that we weren't really weighting things appropriately. So now, right, the legislature's been taking a deep dive into what were the recommended weights? Does this work? How might we look at this differently? There's a lot of questions happening. From my perspective, I think that it's a good idea that they're working through this. And I think that it is important that districts are funded at a level that is appropriate to educate the students that they have in their community. So really the primary weights are related to poverty and, as you said, English language learners. Because we want to make sure that schools have money to appropriately educate their kids. So, you know, there's a lot of discussion around this idea of sort of winners and losers. I'm not going to comment on that. I don't think that that's the way it looks. That's the way it's intended to be. And I don't think that that's the way we should be looking at it. They're looking to provide a more equitable way to fund education across communities. And I think that that's a very good thing. Having said that, every district, once everything shuffles out and the calculations are run for every district is going to have to assess, okay, what does this mean for me? And there will be some, you know, some whose tax rate increases, some whose tax rate decreases, and some that are pretty stable. So every community is going to have to navigate that. And preliminary numbers for us, and I don't put a lot of stock in it because I still think it's a little bit premature, but it looks like Meadowy and Taconic and Green will be okay. Windhall will likely be impacted more negatively from a tax rate perspective. Mm-hmm. But we'll wait and see where it all lands.
And I suppose I should have said when I was first asking the question that the weighting study is spelled, you know, like weight is pounds and ounces and not just waiting around.
There's not a lot of waiting around.
even though I guess I remember reading and sort of smiling over a story I read in one of the state publications about how educators were hoping that the legislature would kind of leave things quiet for 1 year because you already had enough on your plates just kind of getting through another COVID year.
I think everyone is advocating for that. I don't know a single one of the, you know, associations, teachers, superintendents, principals, VSBA, who is not advocating for that. I think everyone is. The conclusion of this is all, you know, left over from last year, and it won't go into effect, you know, for FY23. I don't know what the timing will be, but my hope is that they can give us a little bit of breathing space to do the work we need to do now and not add anything onto our plates right now.
And just one last quick question before we have to run. Been a lot of talk over the years about enrollment numbers, declines and whatnot. It generally, it seems like the overall arc of things has been on a downward trend across the state. I was just wondering, you know, last year, of course, we saw seemed like a large influx of new students coming from out of state or into the area. Have the enrollment numbers within the BRSU kind of remained stable or gotten better, or what's been the fallout from all of that?
So last year, our enrollment was actually down, which is always surprising to people. A lot of that was because we had a large number of families who decided to enroll their students in a home study. They just did not want to, you know, sort of navigate last year through the school district. But when I look at this year's numbers as compared to, you know, the 1920 school year, it's actually relatively stable. So we have, you know, kind of some variability within schools, but for the SU as a whole, we're pretty stable.
All right. Well, we'll have to leave it there for today. But I want to thank you again, Superintendent Lowe, for taking the time to talk with us and share your views from the corner office there. And thank you again for all you're doing. And thank you as well, all you folks who are watching. I hope you found the program interesting, and well, I hope we'll see you again the next time. So for today, thank you, Superintendent Lowe.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone. And like I said, we'll see you again next time. Have a great day.
Thank you for listening local. For more local content, visit GNAT.tv.